This is the Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need to know what it takes for a home loan to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
Hour number two, the Diehards right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Patrick Gilroy alongside Bobby Kaminsky taking you guys up until 10 p.m. Eastern Time. No Anthony Pepe this evening. Taking the night off, taking it lazy. Anthony Pepe being the lazy guy that he is, running 17 successful businesses. That's okay, Bobby. I've come to enjoy almost expecting to spend my Tuesday nights with you.
I think we've upgraded. Pep, kick the feet up. Enjoy a well-deserved night off. We've got this.
We do. And you know, it's almost, and I don't want to say, because I don't want to say anything disparaging to what Pep's done, because I think he's a machine, and what he's done here has been amazing, building this thing up from where it was to where it is. But I think once a week, having a different type of show where it's not so guest heavy, where you know there is back and forth. I think you can do that once, maybe twice a week, where you key in on the one, two, three big stories of the week, and you really just you hammer them home, and you sort of break them apart piece by piece. And it's tough to do that when you've got a guest every segment. I don't blame Pep for doing what he does with the show, but I do look forward to this because through the first hour, I think we had some really important and intelligent conversation, and through hour number two, I expect more of the same.
I'm with you. I'm excited to have guests on. We get great ones on this program. We're lucky to be able to do so with the platform we have, but I prefer the one-on-one conversation back and forth.
And speaking of one-on-one conversation, if Lucky the Leprechaun had something to say, would he have been offended by Kyrie Irving's actions? That's what I want to get into here. Lucky's been around for as long as the NBA has been around. Lucky has been a fixture. Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce got on their knees and they kissed Lucky the last time they played in front of him. Kyrie Irving stepped on Lucky, and he did it intentionally and disrespectfully. Some people call it a cartoon caricature. Others say he offended a city, a fan base, and a legendary team. I want to get into that with Bobby Kaminsky from Basketball Insiders right here on the Diehards.
This is the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
And when you guys need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com, it's always just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com and pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it out to your curbside, or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. We are the Diehards. My name is Patrick Gilroy. His name is Bobby Kaminsky from Basketball Insiders, hanging out here until 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And Bobby, we've talked about this and sort of talked our way around it for the last 25 minutes or so, but I know we've talked a lot about Kyrie Irving and the water bottle incident, the him bringing up the subtle racism, and all of those things that went into it. But Kyrie, one of the things that he said in that statement was that he hoped to keep everything purely basketball. And for him to go and purposely go backwards, he had walked beyond Lucky, and then he took a step back in onto center court and purposely sort of stomped on, and almost it looked like putting a cigarette butt out on Lucky's head. That's to me what I saw. To me, at that moment, it wasn't purely basketball. There was another message. Nothing that he does is not calculated. Everything that Kyrie Irving says, in my opinion, is well thought out. It's calculated. He knows what he's going to talk about in a post-game press conference before the game even ends. That was not an accidental emotional move. It wasn't done in the moment, in the heat of the battle. That was done calculated and on purpose. And the dividing line here to me is fascinating because in listening to some of our colleagues, even locally, they downplay it. They say Lucky's a cartoon character. It means nothing. Others say that, no, this symbolizes the city of Boston. It symbolizes a tradition, a legendary franchise, and every player that came before Kyrie Irving. Guys like Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Glenn Davis have stepped up in recent days and said, you don't do that. We've seen images, some of the most moving images in the last 20 years to me are images of Kevin Garnett getting down on one knee and sort of serenading Lucky, Paul Pierce getting down on both knees as a member of the Clippers after hitting that three to end the game. It was going to be the first time in Paul Pierce's career he didn't start in the he didn't score in the Garden, and the Doc ran the play to allow Paul Pierce to get that wide open three from the top of the key, and immediately he goes over, gets on both knees, and he gives Lucky a full on mouth kiss. To me, those moments. I get emotional. I just got goosebumps remembering them, talking about them. You know, that's what being a fan is all about. And that's sort of the, I don't want to call it redemption as a fan, but it's almost reinforcement as to the reason why you root on these guys, you root on this team. You know, you root for the laundry on the front, not the name on the back. All those things that we've heard growing up. And it reinforces all of those beliefs. And I think what Kyrie did was garbage. I think it was trash. And I think that it's emblematic of the person that he is. I think he's bitter for no reason at all. But all, those are my own personal opinions. But for somebody who wants to keep it strictly basketball, what the hell was he thinking by doing that?
Yeah, I thought that it was classless. It was immature. It certainly went against his message. Another way to look at it would be, because I think it's all about perspective. So much in life, it's not black and white. So you can go vantage point to vantage point and understand where someone's coming from on this. Like I said, I thought it was classless and immature. Also, he had just wrapped up a weekend of relentlessly being booed from when he came out for pregame warmups until he left the court after the game. And he asked for it. He did. And he stuck it to Celtics fans with that performance Sunday. And so he just decided that this is that one step further that he's going to do. If you're a neutral observer, you probably thought it was hilarious. It's this wrestling type of heel maneuver, taunting the crowd and all of this, where if you're neutral, you probably found it pretty amusing. And then there's people from, you know, there's Celtics fans worldwide who they have that same feeling you just described about the logo. And so they took it disrespectfully and are pissed off about it. There are other Celtics fans who they just can't bring themselves to get worked up about a logo. They love the franchise and all that, but that's just one step too far for them to be able to get to. So I think it's all about what's your perspective on this, because all of these can be justified, including the fact that any fan base would not like it if someone did that to them. I think the most notable one for most people is Terrell Owens,
yep,
going over and, you know, disrespecting the star out in Dallas. And then Teague, I can't remember his first name, but he came over
and demolished
and he
him.
Belts him.
Yep.
And so this is a different sport where no one was going to come over, even if they were as angry as the most passionate Celtics fan who's up in arms about this, even if they felt that same emotion watching it play out. It's just a different sport where no one's about to run over in basketball and deck Kyrie Irving. No one's looking to fight. And so it gets handled differently. It obviously, and we're trying to keep it to that incident, not the water bottle thing, but just to explicitly state it clearly, it's not the same and it doesn't make it okay.
Right. One does not justify the other.
Yeah, it's not on that fan to go and handle it or, you know, be some vigilante.
But he was wearing a Kevin Garnett jersey. And again, for we want to label this kid as stupid, as making an idiotic move, as 21, immature, you know, unable to handle his liquor. I am for all of that. But to label this kid forever as a racist, as he's sporting a Kevin Garnett jersey, to me, those two don't make sense. Now, if he was rocking like a Larry Bird shirt or a Kelly Olynyk jersey, then maybe we can go there. But he wasn't. He was rocking a Kevin Garnett old school jersey. So if you're buying, and the old school jerseys, by the way, aren't cheap. Kevin Garnett last played here when this kid was 12. So chances are this wasn't an old jersey that he had in his closet. If you go to to Lids right now and you want to buy a Celtics Kevin Garnett jersey, they're $140. I bought one for my stepson. They're awesome, but they're not cheap. So he probably went and bought one. And if you're a racist, are you really going to go buy your favorite African-American player? Those two don't jive to me. They don't make sense. So just like you don't want to draw that line between what Kyrie did and stepping on the logo to justifying what this kid did by throwing a water bottle, I'm 100% with you there that you can't draw a straight line from one to the other. But likewise, you cannot draw a straight line from this kid throwing a water bottle to labeling him as a racist. There is no straight line to get from here to there.
Yeah, what I'm with you. I don't think this kid was racist. I don't think that was the motivation for his actions. Also, I do want to listen when people of color speak out on this issue and hear what they have to say, because I'm just a white guy. When it comes to his actions, I didn't think it was. And then the last component that I wanted to get to there is there are people who they view entertainers, whether it's athletes, musicians, actors, actresses, they view them more valuing that than the person themselves. That's why, like, there's the whole root for laundry thing, right? Where I also want to make it a point to bring players and individuals to the light and learn about their backstories, how they got to where they are, what they're dealing with, the fact that for almost all of them, they went from being the best player their whole lives to now having to adjust to a smaller role, and in some cases, a dramatically reduced one at the highest level, where there's also more exposure. So there's so many different components that I think need to be brought to light that I think that as journalists, we need to do a better job of.
Has that hurt the rooting for the laundry? Has that hurt rooting for your home team? I personally, I think it has. As you've watched players get more comfortable over the last 15, 20 years through free agency, move more frequently from place to place to go play with their friends. I think that it's created a competitive disadvantage throughout sports. And I think while it's helped the players sort of elevate their limelight, their spotlight, and their cash value, I do think that it has hurt one-third at least, at minimum, of these major markets that these sports play in. And if you're amongst the fan base in one of those one-third of the towns where your team is no longer competitive and you're relying on your team to draft correctly and then groom that player correctly and hope that he sticks around for contract number two, you find yourself in an endless cycle of being mediocre, and that's a product of everything you just talked about. It's the elevation of these players as people as opposed to the elevation of these players as assets to their team. And I think that there's a case to be made for both things to be sort of right.
So it's at the center of why I view the NBA as the hardest professional sports league to win in, because you need one of these top-tier stars. There aren't that many to begin with, and they are more and more often now choosing a select few markets to go play in. And so it's very difficult to overcome that. With that said, there's also more parity in the NBA at the top of it right now than there has been in a long time. As part of it is the CBA and the fact that it's more big twos than big threes right now.
But if the Lakers win or Brooklyn wins, is there really that much more parity? Despite the fact that the majority of the teams are around 500, if Brooklyn wins or the Lakers win, does that parity that you just talked about even matter?
Well, so I'm talking at the top where Philadelphia, which has not proven to be a destination city, where the Milwaukee Bucks, there are all these teams that are legitimate contenders. I think the Phoenix Suns with a healthy Chris Paul,
yep.
I wouldn't have thought that they beat the Lakers, but they're still in the mix, even if they're not all the way up at the top of it. The Utah Jazz, I look at them more like the Al Horford, Joe Johnson Hawks, but they're in the conversation too. So there's more markets that are having legitimate chances to be the last team standing now than there's been in a long time. And so the way that I look at it is when it comes to this conversation about...
I'm sorry, but Romeo Langford is keeping the Celtics in this game by himself. I don't mean to interject.
How about Tatum getting cooking now up to 16 points?
I've been sitting here silently rooting, and the Celtics are within six, and they're hanging tough. And if we go back 7 days ago, what was the one thing I asked for?
We said it last segment.
Show the compete level. at least give a damn and try. And they've got everything going against them in this game tonight, down for the second straight night, three-fifths of their starters. And the fact that they are competing at the highest level is all I needed to see. If they end the season tonight and they wind up losing by 20, I can sleep well knowing that they put forth a damn good effort, and that's all I ask for from this team. I didn't mean it to interrupt you.
No, you're good. I was trying to find my thought. I just found it. But I love the passion there. They checked all the boxes that you wanted to see from this team. So I'm hoping to be entertained by the remainder of this game. I'm still dubious that a blowout is coming. But right now, the Celtics are making it interesting.
We are the Sports Map Radio Network. We are the diehards. No Anthony Pepe tonight. It's Patrick Gilroy. It's Bobby Kravinsky from Basketball Insiders. We still got plenty of time to go. When we come back, we'll continue the NBA conversation. I do want to get into some of the NFL stuff. Here in New England, Mac Jones looking better than Cam in OTAs, and it's getting very interesting. I want to get to that before the program comes to an end, and probably one or two more loud, boisterous interjections, hopefully, from me about not telling you exactly what's happening in the Celtics game as it's happening, as that's illegal, but you'll get a good vibe based on my performance as we move forward here, right here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
We are the Diehards right here. Sports Map Radio Network. Patrick Gilroy, Bobby Kravinsky hanging out until 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Talked a lot of the NBA tonight, a lot of Kyrie Irving. He's really dominated the NBA narrative over the last 4 or 5 days or so, not just here in Boston, but globally. It's been a global conversation that, unfortunately, I understand that it needs to be brought to the forefront. I really do. I think that Kyrie brought it to the forefront prematurely, and he almost... I say this to my kids all the time. I used to say it to my ex-wife all the time. Don't punish me for something that I haven't done yet. And that was, if you look at my divorce papers, I swear, like, it's in there multiple times. Like, don't get mad at me for a sin that I have not committed yet. And I think about this Kyrie Irving conversation, I keep reverting back to that in my mind. Kyrie had a glorious time here in Boston with the fans. He had a glorious time with the coach, with the general manager. They gave him every bit of leeway that he needed. They made it his team, and they allowed him to be the number one decision maker in the franchise. They essentially anointed him the next great Celtic. They did everything right, in my opinion, with the exception of allowing their young guys to blossom in Kyrie's absence. And I think that that really got to Kyrie. I almost feel like Kyrie felt like he had desperately wanted so badly to get out of LeBron's shadow. And then all of a sudden, because Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum elevated their games in the absence of Kyrie Irving, it's almost like his shadow was threatened, even if it wasn't really. Maybe in his own mind it was threatened. Whatever the reasoning is, we'll never fully understand a guy like Kyrie Irving. All that being said, the conversation is one that, while I'm not thrilled that he brought it to the forefront of the conversation when he did, it's one that needs to be had. And it's one that I'm glad that we have had tonight. It's tough from the perspective of two white guys. That's what we are, and there's no getting around that. So, it's hard for us to sit here and chastise Kyrie's feelings and put them down and better understand where he's coming from. And maybe some of the things that he has experienced throughout his first 25, 28, 30 years in life played such a heavy role in his mind that what he experienced during his short time here in Boston doesn't really matter, because it's always going to be clouded by the majority of what he's experienced throughout his life. So I am all for that. What I'm not for, and, you know, we'll transition this to NFL momentarily, but what I'm not for is what he did to the logo here in Boston. I'm not for that. I think that these NBA players are right. They are right to be humanized. They are right to be asking their fans to treat them as human beings, not strictly as entertainers or as circus animals. I don't think that that's what they are. And I don't think that hero worship, which is what we've always given them, is treating them as circus animals. I think it's a stretch to go from hero worship to circus animals. And when you look at some of the documentaries, most notably the documentary that Michael Jordan won last year on ESPN, you know, it's look at the film from 1992. 1992 was 30 years ago. And the film of what it was like for the Dream Team to go to Barcelona, that defines hero worship. And guess what? They weren't treating Larry Bird differently than they were Magic Johnson, who, oh, by the way, publicly had HIV, okay, at the time. And the thousands of people flocked to him. They couldn't wait to get closer to him. So it's a stretch for me. But again, as a white guy, I can't fully understand it. I can only go by my experiences and what I've seen with my two eyes. What I've seen with my two eyes throughout the majority of my NBA fandom is we've treated these guys like gods, not like animals.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that both exist, where the hero worship goes too far, and then it can go too far in an ugly direction. And so, like people often say, fan is short for fanatic and fanaticism. And so at the opposite ends of the spectrum, you get dangerous relationships and viewpoints on especially superstar athletes, the most prominent, most visible figures in their respective sports. And another component to this discussion where I don't have a great answer for it is revolving around the draft, where these athletes are being told, you're going here.
They're being told they're going there for millions of dollars. So hold on. That's like saying that you went to school to be an engineer and, I don't know, Boeing gave you the biggest initial contract offer out of all the engineering places you could go. Are you really going to feel as a potential engineer that you got put out because Boeing offered you $3 million as a 22-year-old kid?
Well, and some people don't. And some people grow to love a city that they never would have picked on their own. But there is this element to it where it's not make your own choice. Like, I don't like comparing the business of professional sports to other businesses because it's so different. It's not apples to apples. But in other fields, you come out of college, you get to choose. They don't choose you. And so I would be skeptical that if it was when you come out of college, structure the salary offerings however you want, that the best players, especially in today's climate, wouldn't disregard certain cities to go to the most glamorous destinations where it's almost, it parallels free agency. So I would be skeptical of that. I'm not quite sure what the right solution is.
Well, yeah, if you do away with the competitive baseline,
sure.
then what's the point of having a league to begin with?
Yeah, and so I'm not sure that there is, that the right thing to do even would be to abolish the draft. I'm not sure what the solution would be. And maybe the answer is that now more than ever on the back end, these players have agency where they don't when they come into the league, but they do. Usually most players will sign that second contract with the team that drafted them. So you get about 7 years with them. And at that point, if they're ready to move on, they're going to exercise their power to do so. So maybe that is the balance.
Yeah, and maybe it is because when you look at the development of that player, if they're in a position to sign that next contract at, say, 27, 28 years old as they're entering the peak prime of their career, and then at that point they can choose their destination and they've got multiple bidders looking for them, I guess go to hell, franchise that developed me, that made me the player I am today. I don't want to play for you. It's a cold weather city. You're got a bunch of racist fans, so I'm going to go elsewhere. So you could have it both ways.
Look at New Orleans with Anthony Davis. How much of a role did they play in developing him? Not a cold weather city. The racial component certainly exists. Again, it just doesn't have borders, that element of the discussion. But he felt like, you guys have squandered 7 years where you couldn't figure it out around me as I'm one of the top players in the game. I'm going to Los Angeles. I'm teaming up with LeBron James. And in year one, he wins a title.
And he forced himself to go. And his family helped him force his way there as the Celtics had the best package on the table for him. And daddy came out and said he's never re-signing there. He hit a nerve with the Anthony Davis conversation. Not over it yet. I am not over it yet. We are the Diehards. This is the Sports Map Radio Network. I want to talk about Mac Jones when we come back right here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to The Diehards on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
I love it when the mic's hot and we're in the middle of a heated debate during the middle of a commercial. I'm not going to get into it now because we just had the best part of the conversation and the mics were not hot. But we're talking about Jason Tatum, and I think that it's a conversation that goes, again, it goes across the landscape of the NBA. And you know, Bobby Kravitsky from Basketball Insider is sitting here, and he's telling me that, you know, if we put truth serum into Jason Tatum, if he were to leave Boston, so he just signed a four-year extension, and by the way, year one of that extension is next year, all right? So he's got a full 4 years left contractually with the Celtics, but we all know that how the NBA works, and you know, by the end of year two, so the season after next, if he's unhappy here, the rumors are going to be a starting. And if the Celtics aren't happy with his performance, that's when they're going to shop him. It's so he's got 2 years left in Boston to really fall in love with the city and for the city to fall in love with him. Otherwise, he's another tradable asset, potentially. And the guy that I look at most notably in the most recent sort of history that was in the same position was Paul Pierce. Paul Pierce famously asked out of Boston after the end of the 2006 season when the Celtics had the worst record in the NBA. He was unhappy with the direction of the team. They had gotten rid of Antoine Walker, brought in Rafe LaFrance. At the time, Antoine Walker and Paul Pierce were not only dynamic teammates, but they were really good friends. And they felt like they had something special moving forward. And Danny Ainge comes in and he says, bye-bye, Antoine, here's Rafe LaFrance. And whether you like it or not, it's part of the conversation. Trades Antoine out for a white guy, like that was part of the conversation back then. And Uri Welsh, like the whole thing was weird for Paul Pierce. And Paul Pierce asked out of the town. And ultimately, Danny said, no, you're under contract. And it wound up working out great for everybody involved. Danny Ainge, most notably, Paul Pierce, most notably, and of course, Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett. Paul Pierce, first ballot Hall of Famer, and for somebody who was never considered being an alpha, a number one, a team leader, that's what he wound up retiring as. I feel like Jason Tatum's in a very similar position where the Celtics are competitive. They're a playoff team year in and year out, but it might take a rebuild to get them to where they want to go. And to take the conversation we had in the break a step further, if Celtics fans are impatient with Jason Tatum right now, where Jason Tatum, I believe, has played in the conference finals his first 3 years in the league.
Except for his second year in the league.
Okay.
When they lost to Milwaukee.
Okay, so two out of his first 3 years in the league, he's played in the conference finals, right? So in there, clearly looks like they're going to bounce in the first round here this year. So two out of his first 4 years goes to the conference finals without a full team behind him, by the way. He is the alpha. Celtics fans apparently aren't impressed.
Yeah, and again, you always have to caution that Twitter, it doesn't always feel like it, but it a lot of times is a loud minority. But I've just seen a lot of, frankly, repulsive behavior from Celtics fans towards Tatum, where it's almost like you're just saying you don't like basketball, you have frustrations in your life, and you're taking that negative energy that you need to get out, and the way you're releasing it is onto the Celtics and onto the best player on the team. And that's not fair to the team or the individual, especially in a day and age where they're here. These comments are getting back to them by and large, maybe not yours specifically, but when it's such a high volume, some of those comments get back. And so believe me that Jason Tatum and his family have the finger on the pulse of the situation. And when there are negative sentiments, and especially ones that, and I'm not saying that they're racial in this instance, but they go overboard in terms of the complaints and the expectations. And when he's going for, I think it was 60 against the Spurs. I said off air, I couldn't remember if it was 50 or 60.
It was 60.
But, so, right, that's what I thought. So when he's going for 60 against the Spurs, and there are people complaining and tagging him in tweets that they're upset, and so it was a different one where he went for 50, but Harry Giles tweeted out, and that's one of Tatum's best friends. They played together at Duke. We like it when they talk greasy, and he's referring to Celtics fans. I just think that this season, and it wasn't there last year, it wasn't there in 2018.
But what's the difference?
I think this season that there's a portion of the fans that have gone too far in that relationship. And so, like I said during the break, if you put Jason Tatum on Truth Serum and said, what has been the most frustrating part of this experience of playing for the Celtics, I think he would say that it's those fans. And that the reason I think it's important to address is that to those fans, do you want to be the reason that Jason Tatum is itching to get out? Or do you want to channel this into a positive where, regardless how the rebuild goes, because like you said, they move Antoine Walker. It wasn't to tank and stay at the bottom. It was an effort to build a title contender around Paul Pierce that failed miserably. So let's just say that Danny Ainge goes about rebuilding this team in the wrong ways. Maybe it's injuries and it's not even his fault, but it doesn't work out.
Say he trades Jaylen Brown for secondary stars.
You want Tatum to love it here.
Yes.
Regardless of how it's going. Like Bradley Beal has never for a second wanted out of Washington, even though they can't even sniff the word championship. And so that's what you want with Jason Tatum. And I think he loves a lot of the fans here and the experience. He's talked about how he loves the city and the Celtics and all that you want to hear. But he's also dealing with a lot of garbage that he shouldn't be having to. And it makes it that much easier when they're not a title contender as the contract comes to an end for him to say, get me out of here.
All right, so here's my problem with everything that you just said. And I wish that I looked at the clock and it's 9:46. Like I could do this for 2 hours. My problem with this, and again, I feel like the curmudgeon, the old man, but that's fine. They have to grow up at some point. And I know that, Bobby, you don't like to bring this stuff back into the real world, and that's fine. But that's where we live, and that's where the people that pack the stadiums across this country live. The 99.9% of the people that pay for the cable, that pay for the tickets, that pay for the satellite to make these guys worth the $100, $200, $300 million that they're worth, they're because of the guys that make somewhere between $70,000 and $150,000. We are the ones that are hanging on. We are the ones that fall in love with these sports, and we are the ones that they have to cater to a little bit here. So if Jason Tatum wants to sign that contract and become the next big payday for the Celtics and the next guy they build their franchise around, he needs to develop some kind of thicker skin. So a secondary guy that he played with at Duke's word, you know, his buddy's word, doesn't dissuade him from sticking around here. And oh, by the way, if he sticks around here, he gets an additional year and another $35 million. I realize by the point that next contract comes around, maybe the $35 million and the extra year that he gets here in Boston, it isn't worth it to him. But all that being said, it's a two-way street. They don't want to be considered just guys that just dribble the basketball, to famously bring up the Jemele Hill LeBron conversation a couple of years ago, right? They both got very offended by the notion that LeBron should just shut up and dribble. I happen to agree with that notion. If he's got more to say, then say it. You've earned your place in society. If you're going to be somebody that we give 15, 20, 25, 30 minutes to on nights where you don't play, across the country, nights where the Lakers, the Cavaliers, the Miami Heat don't play, we're still, if you add up all the conversation pieces about LeBron James on a day in and day out basis between TV and radio, it's probably a half an hour a day dedicated to him, even in the off seasons, okay? Because that's how much he has inserted himself into the daily conversation. So no, don't shut up and dribble. But if you want to say that to us, and you want to say that we deserve to have more of a voice, then you also have to develop more of a thick skin.
So I want to say that I think LeBron James off the court, LeBron the person, is even more impressive and impactful than LeBron James the player on the hardwood. Next, when it comes to Tatum, it wasn't Harry Giles putting something into Tatum's ear. It was him echoing a sentiment that he clearly heard from Tatum. There's also the reality that Tatum does have thick skin, and so that's why even on Celtics-produced content, he has said that when it comes to the fans, it just doesn't – he just gets it that, you know, they love you when you're on top, and they will boo you when you're on the bottom.
Is it different anywhere else, though?
No. This wasn't a unique situation or anything like that. I'm just saying you said he needs to have thick skin.
Right, so I'm saying this.
He has it, where he understands that – I can't let the fans and whatever they're saying, good or bad,
right,
sway me, right? Never ride the highs, never let it get too low. So it's one of those where I think Tatum and his calm demeanor often reflects this, where he's able to just keep it even keeled for majority of the time. So even when he says, hey, a lot of this stuff that's coming back my way, I don't like it, or, oh my God, look at them gassing me up, he keeps it even keeled.
So general sort of question here. Do you think sports over the next 20 or 30 years across this country can thrive the way they did in the last 20, 30, 40 years with guys changing teams as frequently as they do? And the reason why I ask you this question is because, again, if you go to the mall, you go to Lids, you go shopping for a current jersey or a vintage jersey, there's probably four or five current jerseys for sale right now at Champs, at Lids. But there's 12 vintage jerseys, one of them being Larry Bird here in Boston, one of them being Vince Carter in Toronto. These are the vintage jerseys that are around and still being sold today. And I don't think it's a coincidence. Tracy McGrady, he's another one in Houston. That vintage jersey that still, if you look at the top sellers of vintage jerseys every year, it's Larry Bird, it's Vince Carter, it's Tracy McGrady. These guys stuck around their franchises for a minimum 6-7 years. You know, Vince Carter for a decade, Larry Bird for his entire career, Paul Pierce, 15 years in Boston. If you no longer have that, and the average length of a career for a player in a city becomes 3 to 5 years, doesn't that hurt your brand? And doesn't it hurt the ability for fans to really latch on to the team and the player, which is what creates that rabid fan base that you really want? I'll always be a Celtics fan, but I got to tell you, I don't think I'll be as emotionally connected to a player like I was Paul Pierce ever again for the rest of my life. I was 18 when he got drafted, and I was a 36-year-old father of two when he quit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think there'll be somebody that spans that kind of portion of my life ever again. And I wish Jason Tatum could. And I wish nothing more than in 15 years, Jason Tatum's hanging it up, you know, 20 years into the league, and I'm crying my eyes out as a 60-year-old man. I just don't think that's going to happen. I think Jason Tatum will play for six teams before it's all said and done, because even Paul Pierce played for three teams, four teams before it was all said and done. You know, so it doesn't – Vince Carter, how many teams did he play for? The majority of his career will always be a Raptor. But I vividly remember him with the Kings, with the Hawks. Like, those teams are always going to be there. Kevin Garnett, you know, Celtics, Timberwolves, back to the Timberwolves. Like, there's no longer going to be this decade and a half long stretch where you draft a guy, you develop him, you watch him grow up from a 19-year-old immature kid that still is baby-faced to a guy with wrinkles and a bad back at 35 years old. And to me, that's a shame, and it's going to hurt professional sports more than it helps it.
Well, the dynamic has changed where it's more like college sports, and even that's an outdated reference because it's so often, in basketball at least, that it's one and done, maybe two and done. And so financially, the league, I'll stick to the NBA, but it applies to all of them. You look at those television contracts, for instance, you look at the merchandise sales, it's not slowing down business. Nowadays, people, the younger generation, have so much of an affinity with players. And so it helps drive that connection. And so even Celtics fans, people were buying Kyrie jerseys and sneakers left and right while he was a member of the green and white.
My daughter, I bought her a pair of Kyries, and she still wears them, and it makes me a little bit sick every time she puts them on.
And so now it's both. It is, I root for the crest. I love it. But also, I have an affinity for the players. And so it's cool to go follow them as they jump from team to team.
I'm just sorry.
A different environment.
I quit. Can I quit? Celtics just quit in the last minute. I quit too. This is over, and you know, I give them a lot of credit for hanging tough, and they're still fighting. But Brooklyn, to watch Brooklyn, and it reminds me of some of the great teams of years past, whether it's the old Bulls teams, you know, the old Celtics teams. You look at some of the great teams that have really fortified, even going back to when Michael Jordan stepped away, and it was the Houston Rockets with a vintage Hakeem Olajuwon and Sam Cassell and Robert Horry. They could assert their dominance whenever they wanted to. The Lakers teams with Kobe Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal would let you hang around, and then they would assert their will. That's what's happening here in the fourth quarter. It's making me a little bit sick. We are the Diehards. My name is Patrick Gilroy. His name is Bobby Kravinsky. We come back. We'll wrap this thing up in hour number two, taking you guys up till 10 p.m. right here on the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and friends.
I love these. I love these conversations in the commercials. They're great. I swear.
It's got to be its own podcast for after the show.
It really should be. We're sitting here talking about Jaylen Brown, and Bobby Kurminski, Basketball Insiders, is talking about essentially Jaylen Brown. You know, he got crapped all over on Twitter and social media, and he did when he decided to call it for the season, needing the wrist surgery. And I said, well, you know, the people that crapped all over him,
they're idiots.
He hurt his wrist, and then he averaged 30 points a game for the next three games. So you mean you can't man up and play in the playoffs? Even though you can put up 30 points a game in NBA games, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And I reference Kevin McHale playing the 87 playoffs, the entire playoffs, by the way, on a broken ankle.
Most of the regular season. For the worst.
Unbelievable.
For the worst.
I'm just showing you how old I am. Hour number two of the broadcast
here. Maybe
they
get another ring if he doesn't.
It's possible. You know who gets another ring? Rocket Mortgage gets a ring. Rocket Mortgage. Home loans for your family. Never forget that Rocket can. Bobby Kurminski, great job tonight. Guys behind the glass, thank you so much. My name is Patrick Gilroy. His name is Bobby Kurminski. Check us out tomorrow night as Anthony Pepe makes his big return to the Diehards on the Sports Map Radio Network.